Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill, and joining me, as always, is not Joe Healy. Joe Healy is out sick today. We have a slightly different schedule as a result. I will be joined instead by Jeff Pontus, pinch hitting for Joe here on the podcast, and then going to talk with Bradley Smart about the start of ACC play here in the second half of the podcast. A lot to get to today. We've got preview of weekend four of college baseball, which is highlighted by the start of ACC play, the start of Pac-12 play, some other intriguing series, and we got some news items to get to. So a busy day here on the Baseball America College Podcast. And Jeff, I'm happy you're here for it. We're obviously sad that Joe is sick, but we are happy that you are here to take the pinch hit or to come out of the bullpen. Which would you prefer? Would you rather be coming out of the bullpen or pinch hitting?
I'd like to come out of the bullpen, and I'd like to think I'm one of those like hardos that comes in with like a full sprint, you know, just because like I'm really jacked up to be here. So
excellent.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, hope Joe's in the mend, and you know, too bad, because I obviously love listening to, you know, all of your insight and the last pod that you guys did at the beginning of the week, you know, with Joe obviously coming from Shriners. A lot of good insight there, and a lot of just, you know, good talk about the specifics of each game and the situations and stuff like that. And I always really enjoy that insight that you guys provide each week.
Well, we really appreciate it. And Jeff, you haven't been with Baseball America that long. This is your BA College Podcast debut. So if folks want to follow you, that's Jeff Pontus, BA, Jeff with a G. And you host your own podcast in the BA family of podcasts. And so why don't you tell people a little bit about that podcast and how you come at college baseball and how you came to be involved in the college game.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So I have a new podcast that's out. We've been on hiatus for a week. I've been waiting for a couple of MLB contacts to get back to me on days that they could talk to me. They all got back to me like within an hour. So that's probably good. But it's called the 90th percentile. And really what I try to focus on is bringing someone that's smarter than myself about the analytics side of the game. Somebody that's, I'll say, applying the analytics to pitching and player development. We'll get into some hitting as we go along here, but we've been primarily focused on pitching. We've had folks like Tom House on, Chris Langan, who's one of the training coordinators at Driveline. We had on a former and now a professional pitching coach, but he was the former college pitching coach at Elon for George Kirby. That's Sean McGrath, who's now with Seattle. And then we had Nick Lodolo on, who talked a little bit actually about some of the work he was doing pre-draft at TCU on the Rapsodo and some of that stuff. So I find that really interesting. As for sort of, my angle with the college game, I grew up in New England. I grew up about 20 minutes from the Bourne Bridge. So, you know, baseball during the summer and the Cape Cod League was always accessible to me. A lot of my friends from high school and kids that I played with growing up played in the Cape Cod League. So I was obviously really familiar and just love it. And so a lot of my passion for baseball comes from being introduced to it at a very early age in the Cape Cod League, following the college game, you know, understanding the importance of it. And I spent all summer working for Perfect Game and College Ball and covering the Cape Cod League for Perfect Game. So I saw about 30 to 35 plus games this summer. And, you know, obviously familiar with a lot of these players, guys that, you know, have become bigger transfers and et cetera, especially this summer where there was so much activity in the portal. So I'd say that, you know, my job is really to focus on the professional side of things, the minor leagues this year. But my passion, you know, deep down is really college baseball. And there's just so much to cover on a week to week basis and so many games to watch. So it's a beautiful thing.
It absolutely is. That is one of the great things about having 300 Division I teams and, you know, 1,000 other college teams too, that now are like all streaming their games and everything. It's a wonderfully, you know, accessible product. So we're happy to have you. And we're happy to have you here on the podcast to break some things down. Let's start today with the news of the day. As we record this is Thursday, March 10th, And the day started with Texas announcing that Tanner Witt is going to be out for the season. He is going to undergo Tommy John surgery. If you listen to that podcast that Jeff referenced earlier, the one that Joe and I did at the start of the week, we talked about how Witt had been scratched from his start Sunday in Houston, and that David Pierce at the time had said that it was more of a precautionary move, that Witt didn't feel 100% and it was too early in the season to push any pitcher. So now that's what we heard on Sunday. A few days later now, Texas has, they've gone back, they've done more tests on Witt, more evaluation, and the decision is that he needs Tommy John surgery. He will be out for the year. Obviously, that's a really tough blow for Tanner Witt. It's a tough blow for Texas, which loses its number three starter. We'll see where things go from here. From Texas's perspective, I mentioned on Monday that, Lucas Gordon would already be in most teams' rotation. So, he should be able to just slide in. That is who started on Sunday, in Witt's place. They also have Andre Duplantier the second, who's been a pretty good pitcher as a midweek starter, although he did give up 7 runs against Texas State on Tuesday. His 2 midweek starts had gone much better than that. They have plenty of other guys they could put into the rotation if they wanted to, but nobody else is really stretched out as a starter. So I assume that it's going to be Lucas Gordon going forward. Jeff, what are your thoughts on what all of this means, I guess, both for Texas and for Tanner Witt, who is a premium prospect in that 2023 draft?
Yeah. And, the timeline here, we're looking, maybe he returns before next year's draft. There's a possibility that, with all that could be at risk, maybe he takes it slow and he could be a guy that comes out and, pitches a start or two and returns to the Cape or something in that early portion, now that we have a later draft. But we'll see, we'll see how this all shakes out. It's unfortunate timing for Witt, particularly with his prospect status and the opportunity he had on, one of the premier teams in college baseball and having a weekend rotation spot. He's an exciting pitcher to watch too. There's velocity. He's been up to 97, big shape on the breaking balls, a slider that's improving. Not a bad changeup either. But I think for Texas that, they, as you said, and I was going to bring up the fact that you had mentioned it earlier in the week when, there was still some ambiguity about Witt's injury. But they have Gordon, their position. This is a top tier program that has a depth of talent. So the guys that, are in their bullpen, in their midweek rotation, their swing guys, like in this case, Gordon, they're better positioned to sort of weather this storm and, keep chugging along than maybe some other programs are. It's still not great though. I mean, it's still not great to lose any pitching depth this early in the season, having to replace it. And now you're one more guy down with, more potential injuries that could come over the next several months. So it's not like it's, something that Texas can't bridge. They can certainly move forward from this, but it does still hurt the depth, obviously, a little bit, especially when it's a premium talent like Witt, where he's one of those kind of, underclassmen, we'll say, where you kind of expect that the guy that you saw in February and March, once they get along to late April, May, in tournament time, those guys are clicking on all cylinders and, they're pushing for your number one starter type of position. And I think Witt has that kind of profile. It's unfortunate, just as a college baseball fan, to not be able to watch it. But, I do think Texas will weather the storm.
Yeah, the depth piece of this for Texas is where they really take the hit. I mean, the rotation was one of the big attractions to Texas as being the best team in the country. I've said countless times that this is the best rotation and the best pitching staff in the country. And you've now taken one of those big pieces away from it. The two guys that remain in the from the opening weekend rotation, Pete Hansen and Tristan Stevens, have been excellent to this point. Tristan Stevens has yet to allow a run, for that matter, in 3 starts. So you still have that going for you. And Lucas Gordon is a guy that came out of high school with a fair amount of, he was a very high pedigree player in high school. We haven't seen what he can do in the Big 12, we don't really have that level of experience with him. He didn't pitch as much as Witt did last year, but he'll get that opportunity now, and he should be ready for it, to be a good Sunday starter. But now you're talking about a slightly lessened Texas rotation, and that is tough. Somebody's going to have to step up, and we'll see who takes that opportunity. They've gotten great work from the bullpen to this point, led by Aaron Nixon and as their closer, but Luke Harrison has come in and as a freshman and been very good. And guys like that are just going to have to keep coming on. And Texas still has a little bit of time before Big 12 play starts. They're at South Carolina this weekend. That's a diminished South Carolina by their own injuries right now. They're without Julian Bosnick and a couple other arms. And we just saw them get swept by Clemson. So it's not an easy weekend by any means, but this is also not like peak South Carolina that Texas has to go in and deal with this weekend. So I'll be interested to see how they go about not so much setting up the rotation, but setting up the bullpen now, as they now have time to, last Sunday was a thing that they found out like the day before that they might not have Witt. And now they'll have had time to prepare for it. So I'm curious this weekend to see how they go about with that time to prepare.
Yeah. And it's definitely a test too. I mean, South Carolina, they get swept by Clemson. They got a tremendous start from Will Sanders on Friday night. And, I think when you have that kind of talent and, the ability to hit for power like they do in that lineup, they can sneak up on you, and maybe take a couple of games. So it's important for Texas to keep it rolling here, keep the momentum going, and not sleep on a South Carolina team that might have been swept by a very good Clemson team, but certainly is dangerous in their own right and mighty talented.
One last note on Witt. It's going to be very interesting to see what the plan is for him from here, and it's obviously way too early to know that. Like they just decided to have surgery, but he's having the surgery now in mid-March, and that's a time on the calendar that things could go either one of two ways. He could be back really in time for opening day next year. Generally, college players recover a little bit faster than the major league players, I think mostly because they don't need to get to as high of a level to be back to full go. So he could be back opening day-ish next season, or he could take a little bit longer in rehab. He could be missing well into next season or maybe the entirety of the season. We'll just have to wait and see, but it is interesting the timing of this. It's not a case where he's just automatically lost next season, but we also do have to understand that anytime you go under the knife, you can't just look at it and say, well, most people are back within 10 to 12 months or whatever it is, So we'll see where that one goes.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the difficult thing with Witt is it's just, you don't know. He could be back, as you said, round opening weekend this time next year, or, it could be the entire season. There's just a lot of uncertainty. Had this injury happened 2 months earlier, as silly as that is to say, it's probably better timing for him in Texas, frankly,
Yeah, absolutely. These things don't happen on anyone's schedule though, and they are happening far too often these days. But we will keep tracking Tanner Witt as that develops, but it is a tough blow for Texas here today. We mentioned South Carolina and how they just got swept by Clemson. Clemson is one of three undefeated teams left in the country. Clemson, Purdue, and Virginia. This weekend, Clemson plays Northeastern. Virginia is at Duke, and Purdue gets Bellarmine. You had a chance to see Clemson's opponent this weekend, Northeastern. They played in the midweek against Massachusetts, coming off of their Northeastern's big series sweep at NC State. Obviously, you didn't see the weekend arms that were so influential in that series sweep at NC State, but I know you've seen those guys before, and you were able to see the Huskies hitters at least this week. What do you take away from Northeastern after last weekend, going into this weekend and beyond?
Yeah, I think the big thing with Northeastern is just the consistency, and it's not necessarily there from game to game. You know, from a mid-major standpoint, they have probably as much talent as any of the mid-majors that are out there. You know, they have a weekend rotation that features two draft prospects. I mean, obviously, depending upon how you view Cam Schlittler or Sebastian Keane, where you rate them in the draft, regardless, they're, you know, top, we'll say 6 to 10 round type of players at worst. You know, that's decent firepower for a mid-major. I think that's where their advantage is if you get a good outing from Schlittler or Keane, you can hang with just about anybody. They have a big freshman in Mike Serrata, who's one of their recruits. He was a Dodgers, I think a 16th round draft pick last year in the 2021 class. Ended up not signing with the Dodgers, going on campus. He's a 6'1", really projectable center fielder. There's fields to hit. He can run. It's true five-tool ability. And then they have, you know, some seniors and upperclassmen that just do a lot of the little things well. Just sort of classic Northeastern ball players in a lot of ways where, you know, they do what they have to do to produce runs. They're not necessarily big pro prospects. Maybe you have one guy who's more system depth or something like that. But they try to manufacture runs. The pitching staff was pretty good. The bullpen's been pretty good. They've added someone like Dennis Colleran, who was another, you know, top 2021 draft prospect. Didn't get drafted, but I think, you know, certainly talking to some area guys around here last week, they kind of put him on the same plane as a Shane Panzini. That's a, you know, a guy that's throwing 95 with a heavy running two seam fastball out of your bullpen. That's an advantage that, you know, even a lot of, we'll say, power five schools don't necessarily have. So what they kind of lack for offensive firepower, they do have a lot of talented arms. And even in the midweek, you were sort of seeing that, they had a kid, I'm going to draw a blank on the first name, last name Yost, you know, sitting 89 to 91, you know, with a nasty sweeper at like 78 to 80, and it was 30 degrees out. So, you know, I think that there's talent in this rotation. They've recruited really well over the last couple of years, including a couple of big freshmen that they've brought in. So, you know, Clemson is a great team, and it's going to be tough for them to sneak up on Clemson after sneaking up on NC State last week, but it wouldn't shock me if they did take a game, particularly if they do get a good outing from Schlittler again.
I applaud Northeastern, first of all, for the aggressive scheduling of a home game in March. So I don't know how long that was on the table for, you know, some of these Northeastern teams, they take advantage when they can get those home games in early in the season. And so props to Northeastern for that, from that standpoint. But yeah, no one is sleeping on Northeastern. You know, I don't really want to think NC State was last week anyway. Yeah. But there is no doubt that, you know, Monty Lee is not going to have to convince anyone at Clemson that they need to take Northeastern seriously after what happened last week in Raleigh. And so that is a big advantage that the Clemson has over NC State, is that, you know, they can put on the tape and see everything that, that happened last weekend. And Clemson players are well aware of how good NC State can be. And so no one is going to be snuck up on this weekend by Schlitter, Keen or Wyatt Scotty. You know, we'll see what those Clemson hitters have, because this is a test for them in the last weekend before they start ACC play.
Yeah, you know, I think it's clever scheduling by Northeastern. Not a bad opponent for Clemson either. Coming off of South Carolina, you get a mid-major, but, you know, a couple of good pitchers that can test this lineup that's been stellar so far. I mean, you look at Wagner, Engel, Grice, Blackwood, who I believe is a transfer this year as well, so I'm a little on the Cape. You know, Hawkins and French, you know, every single one of those guys has an OPS above 950 right now. So they're getting on base, they're hitting for power. The swing and miss issues that have been, you know, plagued French at times and Grice, the numbers are still there, but they're getting on base and they're hitting for power. And, you know, that's going to produce runs in this lineup.
You said that Northeastern winning a game here would not surprise you. I think that's more than fair. We also have Virginia undefeated at Duke and Purdue at Bellarmine. Is there an undefeated team in college baseball come Monday?
Ooh, that's a tough one. You know, who's UVA have again?
They are at Duke.
Oh, all right. See, that's another tough, you know, conference series. I want to say, you know, the best chance is probably still Clemson. Just looking at some of the other undefeated teams. Yeah, I don't know. I would say probably not. It feels like it's been a long run for there to be as many undefeated as there's been. I know Wake Forest lost on Tuesday, so they lost that.
Yeah, we lost Wake Forest and Tennessee Tech in midweek action. Wake Forest was at Coastal on Tuesday and lost, and Tennessee Tech was up at Auburn last night, and then Auburn came back for, I think it was a 4-3 win. I guess that was a neutral site game. They weren't at Auburn. They were at Huntsville. But yeah, we are now down to 3 from 5, just from the start of the week.
Yeah. And, you know, Oregon State has obviously been, you know, absolutely rolling, but, you know, they're facing a stiffer competition this week as well. And, you know, they lost Will Frisch. We'll talk a little about that later, but, so, you know, there's some questions there too, as to how they hang in there. You know, conference play begins and they're at Washington State. So, another team that could potentially take some losses.
Yeah, it's we are right at the edge here, I think, of where the undefeateds come to end. And, you know, Purdue is the worst of these teams, but they might be the last undefeated. They have obviously the easiest path to it in Bellarmine, which I don't want to just completely discount, but, you know, they're definitely not, you know, it's not a conference series, you know, or a team in Northeastern that made regionals last year. So it's a little bit of a different story for Purdue. And I still am not really clear on how good Purdue is or isn't. The thing I can say for Purdue is that, well, I guess I can say two things. One, they've played it entirely on the road to this point, or away from home. They actually haven't played many true road games. A lot of these have been neutrals, but mm-hmm. they've yet to play in West Lafayette. That changes this weekend. And two, they really turned over the roster from last year. They brought in a ton of transfers, both from junior college and from the portal. And a lot of those players are playing well. They're playing an aggressive style of offense, as Greg Goff teams will do. They're intriguing at this point. We'll see what happens once Big Ten play starts. But if there is an undefeated team come Monday morning, I think we're looking at the Boilermakers. Really just thanks to the schedule, but we'll have to see how this weekend plays out.
Yeah, that tracks. And they're just one of those teams that, like you said, there's an element of mystery as to like how good are they actually. But you know, Notre Dame I think snuck up on some people last year, so maybe Purdue is that Midwestern team that does so this year.
It can happen. All right, so let's head out west. You mentioned Oregon State, which heads to Washington State this weekend. The Pac-12 opens conference play. We're getting Pac-12 conference play a week earlier this year as a result of the creation of the Pac-12 tournament. That's knocked a week off of their regular season and forced them into an early opening, which is fine by me. The ACC doesn't have to get all the love this week. I see some really intriguing teams out west. You know, Stanford off to a strong start. Oregon State, you know, off to a strong start. Just that one loss on Sunday to UC Irvine. You know, Utah is a bit of a surprise. Arizona's playing well. UCLA, of course, coming off of a great weekend in Houston, and just looking forward to learning a lot more about these teams. Jeff, as you've looked through the Pac-12, you know, what do you like? What are you seeing out west?
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's always a team out west that kind of sneaks up on you every year and, you know, overperforms. I felt like last year that was Oregon a little bit. This year so far, it's been USC. The opponents haven't been great, and the schedule doesn't get any easier this weekend with UCLA, but kind of interested because they have, you know, an athletic lineup. They run fairly well. They have a decent catcher back there in Gilmet, who I know I saw a little bit this year with Orleans this summer. Kind of interested to see if USC can get anything going, because they typically, you know, haven't been certainly the class of the Pac-12 for a very, very long time. But I know it is a program where they've made some investments and, you know, tried to get sort of back on track. So interested to see what happens with USC. I think that Oregon State is, and also UCLA, are just in prime position to keep on rolling. Oregon State has, in my opinion, in Cooper Jerpy, a true sort of college front of the line, you know, Friday night starter. Unfortunately, they lost Will Frisch, but it is a fairly talented lineup. I think they have one of the better freshmen in the country in Travis Benzana out of Australia. Really interesting player for 2023. Just makes it into the class, actually. So I'm interested, you know, to really sort of cue in a little bit on that Oregon State, Washington State series. There's also only, I believe, one team, Arizona State, if I'm correct, that has a losing record right now in the Pac-12.
Arizona, I believe that's correct. And Arizona State is the, you know, there's an uneven number of teams there. So Arizona State is the one that's not playing conference games this weekend.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, they're another team that's obviously brought in a handful of transfers. Arizona, speaking of transfers, lost a few, but seems to not have missed a beat whatsoever. You know, they're playing well. Stanford, every single year, year in and year out, is consistent. You know, they always have a couple of arms that maybe are underrated from a pro perspective, but know how to get outs and especially play that sort of West Coast style of game, where it's typically lower scoring and, you know, runs are more manufactured. It's not slug ball like it is in the SEC. But Stanford has, you know, a powerful lineup. You know, they have a trio of hitters there, Brock Jones, Tommy Troy, who I thought was tremendous for me this summer down the Cape, and then got a good lineup. They're deep in terms of their pitching. And Cal is another one that interests me too. The record isn't great. We saw them against FSU this week, but there's still some pitching there. They have one of the top players in the conference in Dylan Beavers. It's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out. My guess is that, you know, when we take a step back in a few months and look at the standings, it's going to be Oregon State and probably UCLA. I thought it would have been Oregon preseason or, you know, Arizona that was competing maybe behind some of those teams in Stanford. But, you know, Oregon took a fairly big loss this week with Adam Mayer going down to injury. We don't know how long he's going to be out for, but that certainly shakes some things up in their rotation. I know Andrew Mosiella was already underperforming. He's out of the weekend rotation. So they're having to replace a couple of key spots here for an Oregon team that has kind of been up and down so far this year.
Yeah, there are, if you look at the projected rotations that are coming out right now for the first weekend of Pac-12 play, it's a lot of TBDs in there. Cal is going Josh White, TBD, TBD. Oregon has a TBD on Sunday. A lot of teams still just looking for the right assortments in their lineups and in their rotations. And some of that is as a result of injuries. Some of it is because we're 3 weeks into this season here. That UCLA-USC series this weekend is fascinating to me. USC is 9-2. They're on a 7-game winning streak right now. They've not played, as Jeff said, much of a schedule to this point. We're going to find out how real that 9-2 is this weekend in a hurry, because going to Jackie Robinson Stadium is going to be a tough one for them. But you know they'll be up for it. You know they'll be up for the rivalry. And I'm just looking forward to learning more about USC. Jaden Agassi, whose parents are both famous tennis players, you know, has pitched really well there. And you know, we'll see how he does against a tricky UCLA offense. Outside of the Pac-12, sticking with it out west, Gonzaga is headed to Long Beach State this weekend. This is a new series. It was not on the schedule before, like, I think it was Tuesday they added this thing. Long Beach State was supposed to go to Nebraska. There's bad weather in the middle part of the country. Everyone is changing up what their plans were. And as a result, Nebraska canceled that series. Long Beach State was able to pivot and bring in Gonzaga, which was supposed to play Missouri at Missouri over the weekend. So it all works out pretty well for everyone involved, ultimately. Jeff, what I want to do here is talk about the Zags pitching more than anything else. This is a team that won the West Coast Conference last year, was in the mix to host last year, came into this year again as the WCC favorite. they had Gabriel Hughes. That was kind of the name that I think everyone knew because he pitched for Team USA over the summer. And he's been very good. I in no way want to downplay what Gabriel Hughes has done as their Friday starter. But then you throw in William Kemper, who's throwing really hard from a really low arm slot. And Tristan Vierling lit up Oklahoma State on Monday. And you have what looks like a pretty intriguing rotation. I guess, first of all, just what do you see from the Zags? And second of all, have you ever seen anything like what William Kemper does just in terms of velocity from that kind of slot?
Yeah, so I think I was digging into maybe Shane McGuire last year as we were doing, you know, draft prep when I was at Prospects Live. And I typically would, when, you know, you use Synergy, we had access to Synergy like we do here. And, you know, I'll set it to 93 miles per hour plus and just see how a hitter handles increased velocity. And Kempner kept showing up. And I remember taking, like, clipping the video and being like, asking one of my friends, being like, who the heck is this guy? And is he really throwing 96 miles per hour from this incredibly low sidearm slot? And it's like, yeah, he hit 100 miles per hour confirmed this weekend. That's in the TrackMan as well. One of the lowest release heights that you'll see. It's substantially lower than what I would consider to be a low release height. I don't know if I've seen many. Justin Lawrence is probably the only other pitcher I can think of that was this low slot that threw as hard as Kempner does. Still having some command issues. You know, the walks are still an issue for Kempner. He's got a 6.19 walk per nine right now, which isn't great. But at the same time, it's a very different look that you get from day to day from Gabriel Hughes coming in with a more traditional sort of power pitcher profile and then having to face more power stuff from a completely different slot in the following day and then bringing Vierling in afterwards. So I think what's really driving the Zags early here is that they have as good a frontline starting as anybody in college baseball.
It's really impressive. Like, this team was really good last year, and you know, they've turned over a lot of things that they did. You know, those players are just gone. You know, Gabriel Hughes stepped into Friday nights and is doing a great job at it. You know, he's been more of a two-way player in the past, but he's been incredibly steady there on Friday nights. This is a team that only has two losses on the season, and they both come against Oregon State. And, you know, if you've listened to this podcast at all, you know, today or any time in the past, like, year, you know how good Oregon State is this year. And, you know, that's all that Gonzaga has in the L column is two opening weekend losses in surprise. And it's just been very impressive to see the way that the Gonzaga has built this thing. And, you know, we'll see if, you know, some of this can continue, if Kempner's control either improves or if it catches up to him, these issues that he's had. But for right now, they're a lot of fun. I hate that this series, to the best of my knowledge, is not on TV this weekend because it's a late edition. It doesn't look like Beach is going to stream it, which is like the worst thing. And I hate even talking about series that people can't watch, but like this one should just be a lot of fun.
Yeah. It was like that, the Cal Florida State series where they played the Friday night game and I think maybe the Sunday, but skipped the Hubbard start. And I was like, I wanted to see Hubbard against a really good lineup. Come on. it was kind of the same feeling. So yeah. And you know, it'd be great if that wasn't the case, considering these are two premier West Coast teams facing off this weekend, you know, that have already had some signature wins early in 2022 as well.
I imagine there's going to be a lot of heat for this Hughes Luis Ramirez start on Friday. Luis Ramirez, you know, of course, has pitched really well all season, and most people got a taste of that on opening day when he went toe to toe with Landon Sims. Jeff, have you been able to look at anything that he's done this year versus what he was doing on the Cape? Because it just feels like on the Cape, he was a little more, I don't know. It just feels like there's a little more oomph to what he's doing right now than what he did this summer.
Yeah, with Luis Ramirez, it's funny. I had made it a point of emphasis to see like as many draft guys, before the draft in June when I was in Chatham for a week, and tried to, you know, also hone in on the Team USA guys. So I had a perfect opportunity when Yarmouth Dennis, which was Ramirez's team, was facing off in Orleans. Jonathan Cannon was on the hill. Brooks Lee was in the lineup, et cetera, et cetera. Peyton Graham was still on that team. So got a lot of good looks. And Luis Ramirez was on the other side, and he significantly outpitched Cannon. And I don't think a lot of us were familiar. You know, the breaking ball shape has seemed to take a significant jump from what I had seen last June. That sinking fastball worked just as well. The changeup that you see parachute off with that nasty late arm side run, that pitch was still working the same way that it was. It's been the breaking ball development from Ramirez that's really stood out to me. And, you know, he's getting results against those pitches, you know, for that reason. And it's been primarily, you know, the curveball. It has some sort of slider qualities to it, but it plays well off of his changeup that has a fair amount of sort of natural parachuting action and drop. He gets the same sort of drop off of the curveball, and it's coming in at 83 miles per hour on average, 81 miles per hour on average. So, you know, he's getting decent velocity on the movement. He's mixing it in with a sinker and a changeup. And I think he can give, you know, both handedness batters really different looks. And that's what it's allowing him to navigate some tough lineups and really be successful early on here.
Yeah. He's definitely been a guy that has made people take note early in the season. The rest of the Long Beach State pitching staff hasn't quite come along at the level that we expect they will eventually to. Matt Fields has been really good out of the bullpen, I should note, but Devereaux Harrison had that tough loss against Sacramento State. Otherwise has been very good, but you know, still waiting for the rest of the Long Beach State rotation kind of to fully lock in. If they can do it this weekend, you know, they have a chance to pick up what would be some really significant wins, but they're facing a team that's operating at a really high level in Gonzaga, and obviously is feeling very good coming off of the series in Stillwater last weekend.
Yeah, and they're sort of, you know, headed in opposite directions with, you know, Long Beach State, obviously after a big series win in Mississippi State, and you know, since then hasn't done a whole lot. So, you know, maybe their fortunes could potentially change. It could be a big momentum swing for each club.
Absolutely. Definitely a series to watch, if not one to literally watch, but you can pull up the scores. Keep an eye on the Twitter this weekend for that one. Well, Jeff, this has been a lot of fun. Covered a lot of ground. There's one more question here that we have to cover. It's the question that we ask all of our guests on the Baseball America College podcast, and that is, what is your favorite sandwich? Whether that's something you're making at home or something that you're eager to get from, you know, your favorite deli when you're going out, but what is your favorite sandwich?
Wow, this is an incredibly tough question, and I am a big sandwich stan. You know, I get my fresh ingredients at the beginning of the week, and I'm making sandwiches all week as I'm working at home. But my wife is from New Jersey. I'm from Massachusetts, grew up here, still live here, but my wife is from New Jersey. And I have to be honest, if you know what a sloppy Joe is in New Jersey, it is just a tremendous sandwich. If you're not familiar, some people may call them Jersey Joes as well. It's not, you know, like the manwich type of thing that you might be familiar with. It's like a sub sandwich, but it's really on like just like standard bread. And you might even get it as a hoagie as well. But it's a really interesting, it's like you get ham and turkey, and you know, there's a lot of coleslaw on it as well. That's kind of a big thing on sandwiches there in New Jersey as well. And then also like Italian subs. Like I'm a sucker just for like a classic Italian with everything on it. You know, if you go to a good deli in New Jersey and you're getting, you know, good meats and cheeses and really good bread. And that's usually like my barometer of how good a sandwich place is if they can hook up a good Italian sandwich.
It is a classic. You know, you've got to be able to do it right. I'm very intrigued by this Jersey Joe's situation.
Yes.
The coleslaw on a sandwich is, you know, underrated. not enough opportunities to put coleslaw in a sandwich.
And they have different ones. They'll have like roast beef and then like corned beef and turkey, and they kind of mix it up. So if you buy them, typically you'll buy them in a big group, and it's almost like four sandwiches that they combine, and like you buy them almost in a plate, and then they're like cut into like squares is the way that they're typically presented. And then the other sandwich,
people in Jersey are wild. That's what I'm learning right now.
It's true. I will say, man, I think the pizza and the sandwiches in New Jersey are tough to beat. Though I will say Philadelphia, that's the other sandwich I should have brought up, is if you've had a roast pork sandwich in Philly, I think it's much better than even the cheesesteaks. And I am a guy that's a fan of cheesesteaks, but it's broccoli rabe, like slow cooked pork, and then it's cut in a slicer. And like they cook these things in like broth. If you've ever been to like DeNick's in Terminal Market, which is like the big one that does it, like you watch it as they assemble the sandwich, and it takes that they fly through it because it's Philly. They make everything so fast. But like they pull the thing out, you got all the gravy on it. They slice it up. You know, they throw on sharp provolone, and it's like not processed provolone. It's like a shaved piece of provolone. And then they have this broccoli rabe that's in the same gravy that they cook the meat in, and they slop that on your sandwich. Man versus Food had, I think, ranked it as the number one sandwich in America. And he's not far off. That's another great one.
It is. And, you know, the cheesesteak is obviously what Philly is famous for. But this is, I feel like if you talk to native Philadelphians, a lot of times they're going to actually tell you like, yeah, okay, go here for the cheesesteak. But this is also like, just go to DeNick's. Yeah.
I can remember I was there for a work conference like a million years ago, and like knowing about the sandwich, finally being able to eat one. And it was just like, oh, I can't wait till I get back and have another one of these. So yeah, those are like my class of sandwiches right there. So I always give too many answers.
No worries. We are big sandwich aficionados. That's the most important question we ask here on the Baseball America College podcast. And that man that was just telling you about his favorite classes of sandwiches is Jeff Pontus. You can follow him on Twitter at Jeff Pontus BA and check out his podcast, The 90th Percentile. I want to thank you, Jeff, for coming on, talking some college baseball. We're going to keep rolling here on the Baseball America College podcast in a second with Bradley Smart here to talk about ACC opening weekend. So we'll do that here in a second. But first, check this out.
We can find reasons to celebrate in the unusual, but also in the everyday. Celebrate a friend for their promotion, their wedding, their new baby. Or celebrate yourself for keeping the couch warm. Maybe celebrate the fact that you can watch 15 college baseball games in one night without leaving that couch. That's something that I may celebrate on a pretty regular occasion on a Friday night. Or maybe you just want to celebrate living in 2022, where you can get beer, wine, and spirits delivered from Drizzly in under 60 minutes without leaving said couch. Drizzly is the most convenient way to buy beer, wine, and spirits, with delivery to your doorstep in under 60 minutes. Right now, Drizzly is giving all new customers $5 off their first order with code FAST5. That's FAST5. So download the Drizzly app. It's the number one app for alcohol delivery. Or go to drizzly.com. That's DRIZLY.com. And use promo code FAST5 for $5 off of your first order.
All right. Today on the Baseball America College podcast, like I mentioned earlier, we are going to break down ACC play with ACC starts conference play this weekend. And with that happening, we want to get into it here on the podcast. So today joining me is going to be Bradley Smart, who wrote the ACC preview for us coming into the season. And he wrote several other previews for us. We were very appreciative of getting him in on the preview action. So now, Bradley, we're welcoming you into the Baseball America College podcast for the first time. Very excited that you're here today. Very excited about this ACC slate, both this weekend and for the season. So I'm happy that we can break that all down here.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Teddy.
I guess, like, let's start with a little bit about who you are, beyond the fact that you wrote the ACC preview for us this year. Like, why did I ask you to do that? So where can folks find you, and just generally what you run a Boston College themed newsletter, like a BC birdball themed newsletter. So tell me a little bit about the genesis of that. And, you know, I guess, just how you got into that.
Yeah. You know, I've always been a big college baseball fan and follower, going back to, you know, I covered summer collegiate baseball, which was really, you know, the first exposure to collegiate baseball. You know, you get guys from all over the country coming in. And then, you know, I ended up at BC, started covering the baseball team there for the Heights, the school's paper. And then, you know, sort of spun off after leaving with my own thing, which is Bird's Eye View. So I'm covering Boston College, but, you know, I really am plugged into the ACC as a whole, sort of running some weekly stories on that. And you can find me on Twitter at BradleySmart15 and then birdseyeviewbc.com.
And in addition to writing about BC and plenty of chatter about their games over on Twitter, Bradley does a weekly look at the ACC. So we're kind of going to bring that to the podcast today. And Bradley, the ACC is an intriguing conference this year. It's always an intriguing conference, but this year, I think as we get into conference play, I find it to be particularly interesting. We have two undefeated teams still, Clemson and Virginia, both sitting at 12-0 now. Wake Forest, Notre Dame, and Virginia Tech all only have one loss. BC is the one team that really has struggled out of the gate. They're 5-6, and I mean, I can't say I'm surprised by that, but I am a little surprised that BC is the only team sitting around like that right now. A lot of these teams are off to good starts. A lot of these teams we expect to continue to play well at a high level. This is a conference that annually is looking at like 9 or 10 bids into the tournament. But has anything stood out to you early in the season? What kind of early season surprises has the ACC dealt to you here in the first 3 weeks?
Yeah. I mean, the ACC, like you said, is always really interesting and, you know, exciting. There's 7 ranked teams right now and not in those 7, you know, there's Wake Forest, there's Miami. I think what might stand out the most is, you know, there's a lot of parts of different teams that, you know, we weren't super sure about going into the year. You get a team like Virginia Tech, who, you know, they're 10-1 on the year. They sort of really cruised through some lower quality opponents, but then, you know, took 2 out of 3 from Wright State. And I think there's a lot of depth in the conference, as there always is. And I think these conference series starting up is really, it's really going to be interesting, because, you know, a team like Virginia Tech or, you know, a team like Wake Forest, or even go farther down like Duke, could really just suddenly start to make some noise. I think there's a lot of talent in this conference.
For me, one of the standout things, and we talked about this on the Monday edition of the podcast, is Clemson being undefeated. I wasn't sure what to make of Clemson coming into this year. And, you know, they were coming off of their first losing season in 60 years. And so obviously there's a lot of just uncertainty if you're a program that has had so much consistent success and then you fall a little bit flat as they did last year. And it's not like they fell on their face. They were just a couple games under 500. But, you know, nonetheless, that hadn't happened again in like 60 years there. So to see them come storming out at the start of the season is significant. For them to sweep South Carolina is significant. Now, Clemson is one of the two teams this weekend not starting conference play. They and Louisville do that next week. And I'll be interested to see Clemson this week against Northeastern. You know, we talked about how they being Northeastern swept NC State last weekend. So it's not like Clemson is getting a break this weekend. That, you know, they have an extra week to get ready for conference play, but it's not going to be an easy week. And, you know, Louisville is interesting as well, kind of in a similar vein. They aren't undefeated. They weren't quite under 500 last year, but they did miss the tournament, and that's significant for the Cardinals. They're off to a pretty solid start at 9-3. They beat TCU on Tuesday, barely. They got out to a huge lead. TCU came back, but Louisville holds them off, and they're 9-3 now going into it this weekend against Michigan. And let's clear Louisville out of the way here, since they aren't starting conference play this weekend. Bradley, what are the Cardinals? You know, I just feel like I still don't know much of anything about what Louisville is to this point. I mean, have you been able to pick up on anything yet?
Yeah, I think Louisville's really interesting. They didn't get off to a great start. I mean, they're 9-3 now, but you know, they dropped two of the first three, and then I think they dropped the game to Dartmouth. But you know, they've won six straight, and that win over TCU, like you said, was not easy. I think they gave up like 8 unanswered runs or something like that. And I think with Louisville, it's interesting because unlike some of the other teams in the conference, you know, they didn't hit the transfer portal at all. It's a lot of guys that have been there and are, you know, stepping into new roles. And I think, you know, considering Louisville's like pedigree, I could definitely see them starting to sort of gel. They have some good guys on the mound. Jared Poland's had a good start. And I think they're one of those teams that could really get better as the year goes on.
Yeah, it's intriguing that Louisville didn't hit the portal because they lost some players in the portal. You know, I saw Georgia Tech last weekend playing Georgia, and Tim Borden, the second, looked fantastic for Georgia Tech. And that's a guy who started his career at Louisville and just never quite found it there. And now he's, you know, starting at second base for Georgia Tech and hit his way into the lineup and, you know, isn't looking like he's coming out anytime soon. And, you know, Louisville's way is to internally develop. And I think that Michigan this weekend poses an intriguing test for both teams. I think hopefully we can learn a little bit more about both of these teams here this weekend in Louisville. All right. So this weekend for teams that are starting conference play, there's some really interesting series. Virginia is playing at Duke. Again, Virginia undefeated. Duke has been a little up and down to this point, but certainly a talented team. Wake Forest is hosting Florida State. To me, that's just a fascinating contrast of styles. Florida State, led by its pitching staff, especially the 1-2 punch of Parker Messick and Bryce Hubbard. And Wake Forest is, you know, a very powerful offense, and they're going to an offensive park in Winston-Salem. So how does that all play out? You have Virginia Tech going to Georgia Tech. There should be plenty of runs scored in that series. Two really good offenses going at it. And then in Raleigh, you have Notre Dame going to NC State. NC State licking its wounds a little bit after an 0-4 week. They did beat UNC Greensboro in the midweek to end the losing streak. But, you know, that's a top 25 matchup and two of the best teams from the ACC last season going at it in Raleigh. So of all of that, Bradley, what kind of grabs you the most this weekend?
Yeah, you know, it's a really good slate. I think the Notre Dame NC State one was one of those that kind of lost a bit of its luster or whatnot after that weekend for the Wolfpack, where and the game before too, where it just seemed like they weren't on. So I think the one I'm most looking forward to seeing is Florida State, Wake Forest. Wake Forest isn't ranked, but you know, they just had their first loss of the season against Coastal Carolina, which, you know, kind of seemed like their first real test. They've been beating up on some subpar teams. But I think it is,
like, I think that was their first road game too.
Yep. Yeah. They've had, I forget the number that they've won in a row at home. But yeah, you know, I think it is a contrast of styles. And I think, you know, it's going to be one of those series where I feel like if it turns into a slugfest, like say, you know, Florida State starters aren't on or something, I think Wake Forest has a good chance at getting a really big series victory. But you know, this Florida State staff is very good.
Yeah, I think it's important for Wake Forest to get off to a good start here because, you know, they need to disrupt what Florida State is trying to do on the mound. They need to get those starters out of the game, get into the bullpen, like really muddy things up there. Wake Forest can pitch. You know, Teddy McGraw is really good for them. Rhett Lauder is really good for them. Eric Adler is, you know, one of the best closers in the conference and beyond. But they really need you know, those guys to step up, but if they can get their offense going, you know, Florida State played a tough series last weekend against Cal. Cal is not the best team in the Pac-12. Joe and I have had on like argument throughout the offseason about how good Cal really is. And I finally just gave up trying to convince him otherwise a week ago because they lost a series at home to Illinois Chicago. But then they went on the road and they played really well in Tallahassee. And, you know, I don't know what to make of Cal right now, but the point is they had to really fight through that series. And it was, you know, a very low scoring series, but they came out with the wins. I think the way you beat Florida State on the weekends is to try and push those starters out of the way and, you know, really test a Florida State offense, which is very new look this year. They hit the portal. They brought in Alex Terrell and Jordan Carrion and, you know, just see what Florida State's offense really is all about. I think that's what Wake Forest has to do this weekend.
Yeah, I agree. And the other arm for Wake Forest, Josh Hartle, is off to just a terrific start this season. And this is, you know, a really big early test for him. You know, Florida State team starting ACC play. You never really know how that first ACC opener will go. The other sort of interesting element of this is, for all the attention that, you know, Parker Messick and Bryce Hubbard get and rightfully get, you know, Ross Dunn had a really good start against Cal. And if he's on, you know, if Wade can't get much in the first two games and, you know, Dunn turns in a good outing, this could very quickly be an easy Florida State series.
Virginia goes to Duke, I feel like, every other year to start ACC play. And obviously they can't start at Duke every year because they go back and forth on who has the home game. But I feel like anytime Virginia is at Duke, it's the first weekend of ACC play. Nobody show me the schedules to disprove that statement. But this weekend at the DBAP, Duke gets an undefeated UVA team. I'm not going to sit here and ask, is UVA going to still be undefeated on Monday? That's not really what this is about. UVA has not been pushed yet, I would say. They certainly haven't played a team as good as Duke. Their schedule to this point has not been exemplary at all. They have played on the road before. That's like the best thing I can say about their schedule is that they did leave Charlottesville and they did play a Big Ten team, albeit Penn State. Duke is going to be a different challenge. This is a team that made regionals last year, consistently is a regional caliber team. They're dealing with some stuff. Duke is, you know, they haven't had a perfect start to the year, but this is a chance to, you know, really rise up and, you know, remind people why Duke was a team coming into this year that was kind of a fringy top 25 team.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a really interesting series. Cause like you said, Virginia, they really haven't been tested. I think they've scored double digit runs in like 10 games.
That's correct.
Like 10 straight games or something. They've been in cruise control. And you know, Virginia's numbers and everything are a lot better than Duke's right now, as you would expect, with that setup. But you know, Duke has guys like on the mound, Marcus Johnson, Billy Seidel, and Jimmy Loper are off to really good starts. I think it'll be one of those series where Duke can kind of get a lot of momentum or sort of be looking up at a big hole early in the year.
I this side of the conference, the coastal division, is very intriguing, you know, because you have Virginia off to this undefeated start, North Carolina surprising some folks off to such a fast start as well and into the top 25. That was a team that we did not rank coming into the season that I didn't really think was a regional team. Virginia Tech, we talked about, off to a fast start. Georgia Tech, of course, playing very well. And Miami has been pretty good, but is coming off of a tough series loss. I mean, to your point, if you're Duke and you fall behind in this division, you know, I mean, it could really snowball on you. So getting your home series here against what right now looks to be the best team in the division is would be significant. What about that other coastal division showdown with the two Techs? I mean, I saw Georgia Tech last weekend. I have not had the opportunity to watch hardly any Virginia Tech. I just, you know, see the scores and they keep putting up a bunch of runs. And You know, they have really nice offensive pieces, and that series win against Wright State, like, I know Wright State's record is abysmal right now, but they've played Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech, and Oklahoma State. Like, I'm not going to hold that against the Raiders. That was a solid win for the Hokies. I just think this is, again, a much bigger test going on the road.
Yeah, I think this is a big chance for us to get a sense of who Virginia Tech's going to be. You said offensive fireworks, I think, in the beginning when we were mentioning this series, and it definitely shapes up to be that. Georgia Tech, I think, has the better staff. You know, Chance Huff is going to be the best pitcher that the Hokies have faced so far. And I think, you know, it's another early Coastal Division matchup. Virginia Tech's got some guys in their lineup that can do a lot of damage. You know, Jack Hurley, Gavin Cross, Eduardo Malinowski from Penn. He just had a massive weekend against Wright State. And, you know, I think it might come down to which team can, you know, obviously it comes down to which team can keep the other team more in check on the scoreboard. But I think this could be a really big series for Virginia Tech if they can go down in and keep the bats going.
Yeah, I think that it really does come down to who pitches better here. And, you know, we saw what Chance Huff was all about last Friday night. Georgia Tech is going to need to, you know, keep building on the rest of the pitching staff. Like, again, we talked about coming out of that series that they did a lot of good things, but still showed plenty of room for improvement. And they're just going to need to keep building on that. All right, let's go back to that series, that top 25 series in Raleigh, Notre Dame, NC State. Notre Dame, you know, is a team that obviously I have felt very strongly about for more than a year now about how good they can be. I know that there's still a lot of skepticism from some corners of the college baseball world out there. I don't think that it's coming from anyone in the ACC. I think it's people looking from the outside, and I understand why it's happening, but, you know, this weekend it does have a big opportunity. It goes on the road to an NC State team that, you know, was exposed a little bit last weekend, but still you have to feel good about what they can be offensively. I just think Northeastern kind of showed that there's still a lot of room for growth for the Wolfpack, and understandably so, they're a new offense, but B, that there is, you know, maybe they showed some ways to match up against those NC State hitters.
Yeah, and I think Notre Dame is going to try and just come in and do pretty much the same thing that Northeastern did, and that's lean on a really strong weekend rotation. I mean, Aiden Tyrell, John Michael Bertrand, and Austin Temple have been fantastic this season. Granted, you know, Notre Dame hasn't played the toughest schedule yet, but they're all going like six innings, pretty much a start. Teams aren't getting to Notre Dame's bullpen early in games. And, you know, that's been enough. I think Notre Dame's coach called the lineup and sort of the offense a work in progress. They're still winning games. They're getting it done. And I think if that lineup really can start clicking, there's been a slow start for some guys like Jack Brannigan, Spencer Myers. If the Irish lineup can kick into gear, obviously overcoming Nico Cavadas's drafting is tough, but if they can really start putting more runs on the board, this Notre Dame team is terrifying. They have good pitching. They play defensively as well as anyone in the country. And if they're scoring a lot of runs, it's going to be tough to beat them.
Yeah. This is a Notre Dame team that did not post a whole bunch of runs last weekend in Minnesota. I don't know how much of that is US Bank Stadium. It looks like the ballpark there plays really big. Ballpark in definite air quotes, since it's a football stadium. And like, there's no way that we can, maybe by now there's been enough data because they play a bunch of D3 games there as well. You know, basically everyone in Minnesota uses that in the early season, no matter whether we're talking about the Gophers or anyone else, they all get in there. So maybe if we examined all of that, we would find out whether that's like how much of a pitcher's park that place plays as a baseball stadium. It seems like it's not an easy place to hit, though. It certainly wasn't easy for Notre Dame last weekend. They swept the weekend against their Big Ten competition. And if they can bring that pitching to NC State this weekend, I think they're going to have a really good shot to you know, play really well in Raleigh. It's a little bit different the way that they're going about it on the mound this year, because you're right, they have been getting extended starts from all of their starters, whereas a year ago there was John Michael Bertrand going extended, but otherwise it was a little more piggybacking and more four inning stints at a time. But they really seem to have hit on a rotation that may very well be, I was about to say the best in the conference. Florida State has more stuff, but like what Notre Dame is doing on the mound right now, you know, it's close to the best in the conference if it's not the best in the conference.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you can just trot out three guys that you know will just work multiple in it, or work long into games, I think they have the three of them. You know, they're all over 15 innings. They combine for like 60 strikeouts to like 9 walks or something. It's really big in college baseball, obviously, when you have these good starters and you don't have to, you know, overwork the bullpen or anything. And so it's definitely a recipe for success with those three. I mean, their Sunday starter was the ACC pitcher of the week last week after his outing against Minnesota.
Yeah, I mean, and that just speaks to the depth they're running out there, which again is exceptional. Okay, so that's this weekend, Bradley. What about long term? We picked Notre Dame. That was a bit of a collective effort between you, me, and Joe to pick Notre Dame to win the conference in the preseason. Are you still feeling good about that? And is there anyone that you think has materially changed their long-term outlook since you wrote up the preview a few weeks ago?
Yeah, so I think it's still Notre Dame. I think when the lineup starts to click, I'm sure it will. I mean, and it still has, like, it's not like they're not scoring runs outside of that series in the football stadium. They've scored a good bit of runs. They've pushed and sort of cruised. And so I think they should still be the favorite. I think just the depth of the conference might have been more than I was expecting. You know, teams like Wake Forest, Clemson, just sort of up and down. I mean, we know the ACC is going to have a lot of bids, and we know, you know, teams can come out of nowhere near the end, like Duke did last year, to breeze through the ACC tournament. And I think, you know, this is a big weekend to kind of get a sense of, all right, what's the measuring stick for the weekends to follow?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just looking forward to getting to see these teams, you know, match up against each other. Always a good time, and I'm glad we've got some very intriguing matchups throughout the conference here on opening weekend. Okay, so last question for you, Bradley. We ask all of our guests on the Baseball America College podcast this question. It's really, frankly, the most important question we have for the podcast, and that is, what is your favorite sandwich? As Joe will tell you, this doesn't have to be limited to a sandwich you make at home. Like, it could be that, or it could be something that you go out to a certain restaurant for. But what are you thinking when I say favorite sandwich?
And I'm going to come across as very, very basic with the answer to this question. But my most trusted sandwich companion throughout my whole life has been a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And I can't back down from that.
I mean, that is a classic sandwich. Absolutely. You are far from the first person to select that. If Joe were here, he would really like get into the, like, how you go about making your PB&J, because Joe has some very like serious opinions about this. I personally don't, but I will ask, what jelly are you going with? Because that obviously is a very delicate subject matter for a lot of people.
Yeah, that is a tough one. My preferred jelly, I don't have it right now because it's from a place back in Maine. This restaurant I used to work at, and some other people in my family have worked at, Dutch's Portland Blueberry Jam, and it's delicious. If you're ever in Portland, I recommend Dutch's. Shameless plug there, but that would be my go-to for a perfect PB&J sandwich.
Alrighty, that just brings the whole sandwich up a level, because we're not talking about grape or strawberry. We're not talking about a basic PB&J anymore. So yeah. I like the pick there.
Yeah, elevated a bit.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining me here today, Bradley, to break down the ACC. Again, folks, you can find Bradley's work when he's not writing at baseballamerica.com. You can find him on Twitter at BradleySmart15. And the website for his newsletter is birdseyeviewbc.com. That'll do it for us today on the Baseball America College Podcast. Thank you all for listening. You can track all of the action throughout the weekend at baseballamerica.com. Joe will be back in action at some point. Hopefully he'll be back in action on Monday. So we'll be back here with another edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. So if you are subscribed to that podcast on your favorite podcasting app, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever you use, check your feeds for that on Monday. And if you're not subscribed yet, now is the perfect time to subscribe as we go twice a week throughout the college season. Thank you all for listening. I would normally say for Joe, but Joe's not here. So for me, for Jeff, for Bradley, thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time.